Chapter 30. The subterranean city was laid out in a grid pattern under the domed roof of an enormous cavern. The ancient metropolis was cut off from the sun and should have been in complete darkness, but it shimmered in a silvery green light that emanated from every building and street.
"What makes everything glow so brightly?" Schrader asked as he limped along a street with Carla at his side.
"I studied light-emitting minerals as part of a geology course," Carla said. "Some minerals glow under the influence of ultraviolet rays. Other types emit light from radiation or chemical change. But if we're right, and this is an old volcano, maybe there's a thermoluminescent effect caused by heat."
"Could this be an old magma chamber?" Schrader said.
"That's possible. I just don't know. But there's one thing that I'm absolutely sure of."
"What's that, my dear?"
She gazed with awe at the glimmering edifices that stretched off in every direction. "We are strangers in a strange land." After leaving the mural tunnel that led to the city, they had walked under a huge corbel arch down a broad ramp to an open plaza with a step pyramid built of huge blocks at the center. The processional motif, including the domesticated woolly mammoths, was continued on the exterior levels of the pyramid, although the colors were less bright than in the access tunnel. Carla surmised that it was a temple or platform for priests or speakers to address people gathered in the plaza. A paved boulevard about 50 feet wide led into the heart of the city. They had strolled along the thoroughfare like a couple of tourists bedazzled by the bright lights of Broadway. The buildings were much smaller than Manhattan's skyscrapers, three stories at the most, yet they were architectural wonders, considering their probable age. The promenade was lined with pedestals. The statues they once supported lay in unrecognizable heaps of rubble, as if they had been pushed off their perches by vandals. Schrader rested his sore ankle. Then he and Carla explored a couple of buildings, but they were as empty as if they had been swept clean with a big broom.
"How old do you think this place is?" Schrader said as they plunged deeper into the city.
"Each time I try to date it, I become tangled in contradictions. The fact that the murals show humans and mammoths coexisting places them in the Pleistocene period. That was a time span that ran from 1.8 million to 10,000 years ago. Even if we go with the most recent date of 10,000 years, the high level of civilization here is astonishing. We've always assumed that mankind didn't evolve from its primitive state until much later. The Egyptian civilization is only around 5,000 years old."
"Who do you think built this wonderful city?"
"Ancient Siberians. This island was connected to an Arctic continental shelf that extended out from the mainland. I didn't see any pictures of boats, indicating that this was pretty much a landlocked society. From the looks of it, this was a rich city. Since it was such a flourishing society, why did it end?"
"Maybe it didn't end. Maybe it simply moved somewhere and became the basis of another society.
There is evidence that Europeans as well as Asians populated North America." As Schrader mulled the implications of Carla's analysis, excited voices could be heard shouting from behind them in the direction of the city gate. He squinted back along the boulevard. Pinpoints of light were moving in the area around the plaza. The ivory hunters had also blundered into the city.
"We are sitting ducks out here in the open," Schrader said. "We can lose them easily if we get off this lovely avenue."
He slipped into an alley that connected with a narrow side street. The buildings were smaller than on the main boulevard. None was taller than one story. They appeared to serve more of a residential function than the grander, more ceremonial structures lining the main drag. As a former soldier, Schrader had accurately sized up the defensive situation. The city was a huge maze of hundreds of streets. Even with the omnipresent halo of light that shimmered over the city, as long as they kept alert and on the move through the labyrinth, their pursuers would never catch them. At the same time, Schrader was aware that they could only run for so long. Eventually, they would run out of food and water. Or luck. His goal was to get to the far side of the city. He had hopes, supported by the relatively good quality of the air, that there might be another way out. The people who built this subterranean metropolis seemed to have done so with logic and reason. Thus, it would be logical and reasonable that they had more than one way to get in and out. They were more than halfway across the city when Carla cried out in alarm. She dug her fingers into Schrader's arm. He slipped the automatic rifle off his shoulder.
"What is it?"
He glanced around at the silent facades as if he expected to see the leering faces of the ivory hunters in the windows.
"Something ran down that alley."
Schrader followed her pointing finger with his eyes. Although the buildings produced their own light, they were built close together, and the narrow spaces between them were in deep shadow.
"Something or someone?"
I don't know.
She laughed.
"Maybe I've been underground too long."
Schrader had always trusted his senses above his analytical skills.
"Wait here," he said.
He approached the alleyway with his finger tight on the trigger. He edged up to the alley, stuck his head around the corner, and flicked the flashlight on. After a few seconds, he turned and came back.
"Nothing," he said.
"Sorry. It must have been my imagination."
"Come," he said, and to Carla's surprise, he headed toward the alley.
"Where are you going?"
"If there is something out there, it's better that we sneak up on it rather than the other way around."
Carla hesitated. Her first impulse had been to flee in the other direction. But Schrader seemed to know what he was doing. She hurried to catch up. The alley led to another street similarly lined with buildings. The street was deserted. There were only the squat little structures with their windows staring like vacant eyes in the strange half-light. Schrader checked his internal compass and again started in a direction he hoped would take them to the far side of the city. After they had walked for a few blocks, Schrader stopped suddenly and raised his rifle. He lowered the weapon after a second and rubbed his eyes.
"This strange light has me crazy.
Now it's my turn to start seeing things. I saw something run from one side of the street to the other."
"No. I saw it too," Carla said.
"It was large. I don't think it was human."
Schrader started off again.
"That's good. We haven't had much luck with humans lately."
Carla's nostrils picked up a familiar musky odor. The shed housing the baby mammoth had the same smell. Schrader's nostrils had picked up the scent as well.
"Smells like a barnyard," he said.
The fragrance of mud, animals, and manure became stronger as they made their way through an alley to another street. The street ended in a plaza similar to the public square they had encountered at the entrance to the city. The plaza was rectangular, about 200 feet to a side. Like the earlier square, it was dominated by a step pyramid about 50 feet high. But what caught Carla's eye was the immediate area around the pyramid. Unlike the first plaza, whose pavement was made of the same glowing stone as the rest of the city, this space looked as if it were covered by a thick, dark growth of weeds or grass. Carla's first impression was that she was looking at an untended garden similar to something she might see in a public park. That didn't make sense given the lack of sunlight. Drawn by her natural curiosity, she started toward the pyramid. The vegetation began to move. Schrader's aging vision had trouble seeing details in the half-light, but the movement caught his eye. The training ingrained long ago came into play. He'd been taught that the best insurance when faced with a potential threat was a lead curtain. He stepped in front of Carla and he brought his rifle to his hip. His finger tightened on the trigger as he prepared to saturate the square with a lethal spray.
"No!"
Carla shouted. She put her hand in front of his chest. The plaza undulated, and from the moving mass came a sound of snorts and squeaks and heavy bodies starting to stir. The image of vegetation disintegrated to be replaced by large furry clumps the size of large pigs. Schrader stared at the strange creatures milling around the square. They had stubby trunks and upturned tusks, and their hides were covered with fur. The significance of what he was seeing finally dawned on him.
Baby elephants?
No,
Carla said, amazingly calm in spite of her unbounded excitement.
They're dwarf mammoths.
That can't be. Mammoths are extinct.
I know. But look closely.
She pointed the flashlight at the animals. A few of them glanced at the light, showing shiny round eyes of an amber hue.
Elephants don't have fur like that.
This is impossible,
Schrader said, as if he were having a hard time convincing himself.
Not entirely.
Traces of dwarf mammoths were found on Wrangel Island as recently as 2000 BC. That's only a blip in time. But you're right about this being unbelievable. The closest I've come to these creatures has been the fossilized bones of their ancestors. Schrader said,
Why don't they run away?
The mammoths seemed to have been sleeping when they were disturbed by the human intruders, but they weren't alarmed. They moved around the square in singles, twosomes, or small groups, and showed little or no curiosity at the strangers.
They don't think we'll hurt them, Carla said.
They've probably never seen humans before. My guess is that they evolved from the full-grown animals that we saw in the murals. They've adjusted to the lack of sunlight and food through generations. Schrader gazed at the herd of pygmy mammoths and said,
Carla, how do they live?
There's an air supply.
Maybe it seeps down from the ceiling or through crevasses we don't know about. Maybe they've learned to hibernate to preserve food.
Yes, yes, but what do they eat?
She glanced around.
There must be a source somewhere.
Maybe they get out into the open.
Wait. Maybe that's what happened to the so-called baby that the expedition found. It was looking for food.
We must try to find out where they go, Schrader said.
He made his way to the pyramid with Carla close behind. The mammoths moved aside to create a path. Some were slow to get out of the way and brushed against the humans, who had to wind their way through piles of manure. They reached the pyramid steps and began to climb. The effort put pressure on Schrader's weak ankle, and he had to climb on his hands and knees, but he made it slowly to the flat top of the structure. The elevation offered a total view of the square. The animals were still milling around with no rhyme nor reason to their movements. Carla was counting the animals and figured there were about 200 of them. Schrader had been scanning the disorganized mob with other goals in mind, and after a few minutes, he saw what he was looking for.
Look, he said. The mammoths are forming into a loose queue over there near that corner of the plaza.
Carla looked at where Schrader was pointing. The herding animals had squeezed into a street as if suddenly inspired by a common purpose. Other mammoths began to follow, and soon the whole group was moving toward the same part of the square. With Carla helping him, Schrader climbed off the pyramid and hobbled after the departing herd. By the time they got to the corner, the entire herd had vanished from the square and was moving slowly along a narrow street that led back to the main boulevard. They tried not to startle the animals, although that didn't seem to be a danger. The mammoths seemed to have accepted the newcomers as part of the herd. After about 10 minutes, they began to see a change in the character of the city. Some of the houses on both sides were damaged. Their walls were knocked in as if hit by a rogue bulldozer. Eventually, they came to an area that looked as if it had been bombed. There were no freestanding buildings, only glowing piles of rubble intermingled with huge boulders made of a different, non-luminous mineral. The sight revived unpleasant memories for Schrader. He stopped to give his ankle a rest and looked around at the ruined landscape.
This reminds me of Berlin at the end of World War II. Come, we must hurry or we'll lose them.
Carla dodged a pile of manure.
I don't think we'll have to worry about that with the trail they're leaving.
Schrader's deep laughter echoed off the walls of rubble that now arose high on both sides. Carla joined in despite her weariness and fears, but they picked up the pace more in eagerness to find a way out than concern at losing the herd. More of the rock they were seeing was composed of non-glowing material. Then all trace of the luminescent rock disappeared and the path in front of them darkened. Carla turned the flashlight on, and its dim beam caught the tails of the mammoths. The creatures had no trouble navigating the darkness. Carla guessed that their eyes must have adjusted to the lack of light in the same way their bodies had shrunk to accommodate a diminishing supply of food. Then the flashlight went dead. They followed the herd by listening to the scuffle of the many feet and the chorus of grunts and snorts. The complete blackness assumed a bluer cast that slowly changed to dark gray. They could see the furry rumps about 50 feet ahead. The animals seemed to have picked up their pace. The grayness turned to white. The path made a right, then a left-hand turn, and they were out in the open, blinking their eyes against the sunlight. The mammoths rambled ahead, but the two humans stopped and shielded their eyes with their hands. As their vision acclimated to the change in light, they looked at their surroundings through narrowed eyes. They had emerged from a gap in a low bluff and were at the edge of a natural bowl several hundred yards across. The mammoths hungrily grazed the short grassy vegetation that covered the bowl's floor. "This is quite amazing," Carla said. "These creatures have adjusted to two worlds, one of darkness, the other of light. They are miracles of adaptation as well as anachronisms."
"Yes, very interesting," Schrader said in a disinterested voice.
He wasn't being rude, only practical. He realized that they were far from safe. Their pursuers could be on their heels. He scanned the walls of massive, blackened boulders surrounding the natural basin and suggested that they make their way to the perimeter to look for a way out. Carla was reluctant to leave the herd of mammoths, but she climbed with Schrader up a gradually ascending hill to the edge of the boulder field. The rocks ranged in size from some as big as cars to others nearly as big as a house. They were tumbled in heaps more than 100 feet high in some cases. Some of the massive rocks were piled so tightly together that it would have been impossible to slip a knife blade between them. There were openings in the rocky ramparts, but the breaks only went in a few feet or yards. As they made their way along the impenetrable wall, Carla became discouraged. They had escaped the fire only to wind up in a very large frying pan. Schrader, on the other hand, seemed to have been revived by the fresh air. He ignored the pain in his ankle, his eyes darting along the face of the wall. He disappeared into a gap and after a few minutes let out a yell of triumph. Schrader emerged from the opening and announced that he had found a way through the barrier. He grabbed Carla's hand as if he were leading a child, and they plunged into the mass of monoliths. They had only gone along the path a few steps when a man stepped out from behind a boulder. It was Grisha, the leader of the murderous ivory hunters.